The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, it's the Thursday. And Memo Watch is on. Yes, welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com at 3 p.m. Eastern on through the magic of digital audio on the Progressive Voices Network at 6 Eastern, Tuesdays through Fridays. Memo Watch. We're all preoccupied with this memo that was written by staffers at the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes's staffers. And if you're as confused as I am, don't worry about it. I'm not saying don't worry about the memo. I think there's stuff there. I was reading, let's see if I can find, if I can pull up this story from Ross Story. Be prepared to walk out. Ex-FBI agents say Chris Wray, the new FBI director, must be ready to resign over the Nunes memo. We have a president who is rejecting his own FBI and Department of Justice, who is warning him, do not release this memo because it contains classified information. In fact, the latest headline to cross my screen from CNN reads, quote, White House rejects FBI and DOJ requests for some memo redactions. So I've spent the better part of the last, 48 hours or so trying to figure out what this memo is actually really about. And Charlie Savage over at the New York Times was on the TV, and he had a decent explanation. Here's what he said.
At the end of the day here, what this is about is going on offense as the best defense against Bob Mueller's Russia investigation as it heats up and gets closer to damaging President Trump. And by extension, the Republican Party. The chain of logic here is as follows. First, you conflate the entire Russia investigation with just the information gathered by Chris Steele. So you ignore the hacking of the Democratic emails, the use of social media accounts by Russian trolls to drive up dissension in the system and so forth, and you say all the Russia investigation is, the fountainhead of it, the beginning and the end of it, is this dossier of unverified allegations by Chris Steele, who was hired by Democrats. And you also say he probably made that up because this was about smearing someone who was running against Hillary Clinton. This wasn't about him actually talking to real sources who were telling him real things. So this is just about the Steele dossier. Then you say the investigators got a warrant as part of that investigation by going to a judge and using Mr. Steele's information without explaining to the judge adequately that this was Democratic paid for opposition research. This is and you ignore all the other information that was in that application, stuff that the FBI cannot talk about to defend itself because that would blow every other source the country has for figuring out what Russia's up to, surveillance, human sources, and so forth. No, it's just Steele. That's all that this thing was, and you make that scandalous. And then the third step is the memo says Rod Rosenstein used this too because he signed off on resubmitting it to the court for an extension. That means he's now vulnerable to attack as also complicit in this Watergate level offense. Rod Rosenstein stands between Trump and Mueller. He's the only person who can fire Mueller. He has said he would refuse an illegal order to fire Mueller because the only way to make it legal is if he finds that Mueller has committed misconduct, and he has not seen any evidence of that. If Rod Rosenstein is fired because he used this Steele information, and that was indeed scandalous or can be said to be scandalous, Trump can put someone else in that role who would be more accommodating and would be willing to say, I see that there's a reason to fire Mueller and shut down this investigation.
Right. All right. If your head is spinning, you're not alone, because mine is too. It's really hard to follow. What is known, what is easy to figure out, is that this is a partisan, to borrow a phrase from the president, witch hunt. They're going after this memo as a way to discredit it, discredit the FBI, discredit Mueller, discredit the investigation, without any concern for the rule of law, right? For national security. He had Adam Schiff coming out last week after the Intelligence Committee voted along party lines to release this thing, but not to let the FBI or the DOJ redact any parts of it, or without allowing the Democratic rebuttal, if you will, to be released. Here's what Adam Schiff had to say last week.
We had votes today to politicize the intelligence process, to prohibit the FBI and the Department of Justice from expressing their concerns to our committee and to the House, and to selectively release to the public only the majority's distorted memo without the full facts. A very sad day, I think, in the history of this committee. As I said to my committee colleagues during this hearing, sadly, we can fully expect that the President of the United States will not put the national interest over his own personal interest. But it is a sad day indeed when that is also true of our own committee, because today this committee voted to put the President's personal interest, perhaps their own political interest, above the national interest, in denying themselves even the ability to hear from the department and the FBI. And that is, I think, a deeply regrettable state of affairs. But it does show how, in my view, when you have a deeply flawed person in the Oval Office, that flaw can infect the whole of government. And today, tragically, it infected our committee.
It infected the committee. That's an understatement. And so Trump leaving the State of the Union address the other night was stopped, you know, during the handshake line on his way out the door by one of the Republican congressmen. Listen carefully. You can hear the hot mic picked it up.
Let's release the memo.
Release the memo.
100%.
And he said, no worries, 100%. Ha, ha, ha. Well, the reports were, at that time, he hadn't even read it. He probably still hasn't read it because he doesn't read anything. But he knows that this is a good partisan thing for him. This country is in really bad shape. It's really scary. Adam Schiff wrote an op-ed for The Washington Post about the memo. The headline reads, Representative Nunes' memo crosses a dangerous line. It's not very long. I'm going to share it with you because I think it's important. I was talking to my husband, David, about it, and he said, so they'll release the memo and, you know, the American public will see through it, that it's just one-sided bullshit. And that's my fear, is that no, they won't, because we are so divided. And you've got this echo chamber in Fox and the Sinclair broadcast stations that are coming out with the Republican Party line as if it's fact. And people aren't getting the opportunity to think for themselves. At least when we had a fairness doctrine, when a news operation, a TV station, was neutral, people were presented with both sides of every story and could figure it out for themselves. We don't have that anymore. So you really have to do the digging to find the both sides of any story. And unfortunately, most of the time now, people don't do the digging. They just listen to what they're spoon-fed by this right-wing echo chamber, and that's what they echo back. So Adam Schiff wrote this. I think it's in today's New York Times. Even during the most difficult of times, when Congress had seemingly lost the capacity to govern and partisan storms raged across Capitol Hill, the intelligence committees remained largely insulated from the nation's increasingly self-destructive policies. No more. On Monday, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, Republican of California, moved to release a memo written by his staff that cherry-picks facts, ignores others, and smears the FBI and the Justice Department, all while potentially revealing intelligence sources and methods. He did so even though he had not read the classified documents that the memo characterizes and refused to allow the FBI to brief the committee on the risks of the publication and what it has described as, quote, material omissions of facts that fundamentally impact the memo's accuracy. The party line vote to release the Republican memo, but not a Democratic response, was a violent break from the committee's nonpartisan tradition and the latest troubling sign that House Republicans are willing to put the president's political dictates ahead of national interest. I might add, they not only are they refusing to release the Democrats' response, as it were, they're not even allowing their Senate counterpart, the Senate Intelligence Committee, to read this stuff before they release it. And there are a few Republican senators who are now coming out and saying this is dangerous. But you know what? The president doesn't care. He just doesn't give a shit because it doesn't validate his mistaken beliefs. It doesn't validate his side of the story. Anyway, back to this Adam Schiff op-ed. The reason for Republicans' abrupt departure from our nonpartisan tradition is growing alarm over special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 campaign. In a matter of months, the president's first national security advisor and a foreign policy advisor have pleaded guilty to felony offenses, while his former campaign chairman and a deputy campaign manager have also been indicted. As Mueller and his team move closer to the president and his inner circle, a sense of panic is palpable on the Hill. GOP members recognize that the probe threatens not only the president, but also their majorities in Congress. In response, they have drawn on the stratagem of many criminal defense lawyers. When the evidence against a defendant is strong, put the government on trial. Ooh, that's an important line. The Nunes memo is designed to do just that by furthering a conspiracy theory that a cabal of senior officials within the FBI and the Justice Department were so tainted by bias against the president that they irredeemably poisoned the investigation. If it wasn't clear enough that this was the goal, Nunes removed all doubt when he declared that the Justice Department and the FBI themselves were under investigation at the hearing in which the memo was ordered released. The investigators are under investigation by this committee. This decision to employ an obscure rule to order the release of classified information for partisan political purposes crossed a dangerous line. Doing so without even allowing the Justice Department or the FBI to vet the information for accuracy, the impact of its release on sources and methods and other concerns was, as the Justice Department attested, quote, extraordinarily reckless. But it also increases the risk of a constitutional crisis by setting the stage for subsequent actions by the White House to fire Mueller or, as now seems more likely, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, an act that would echo the 1973 Saturday Night Massacre. This just gets more and more unbelievable. I mean, with each passing sentence, I just shake my head. Back to Schiff. As multiple investigations work to unearth the full truth, the president has lashed out with Nixonian ferocity at the Justice Department, the FBI, congressional investigators, and, of course, the media. However, unlike President Richard Nixon, who waged his Watergate fight without the same kind of vocal allies, Trump not only has an entire media ecosystem dedicated to shielding him from accountability, but also senior Republicans on the Hill who have cast aside their duty to uphold the law and perform oversight in favor of protecting the Trump presidency, no matter the cost. Nunes may have wielded the committee gavel here, but ultimate responsibility lies with House Speaker Paul Ryan, who lacked the courage to stop him. Again, another really important line. Ryan, who has never served on the Intelligence Committee, seems not to understand the central bargain underpinning the creation of the Intelligence Committees after Watergate. In exchange for the Intelligence Committee's willingness to reveal closely guarded national secrets to a select group of members and staff for the purposes of oversight, the committees and the congressional leadership pledged to handle that information responsibly and without regard to politics. My, how things have changed. That contract has now been spectacularly broken by the creation of a partisan memo that misrepresents highly classified information that will never be made public. Intelligence agencies can no longer be confident that material they provide the committee will not be repurposed and manipulated for reasons having nothing to do with national security. As a result, they will be far more reluctant to share their secrets with us in the future. Moreover, sources of information that the agencies rely upon may dry up, since they can no longer count on secrecy when the political winds are blowing. This is a grave cost for short-term political gain. Schiff ends this this op-ed by saying, "The obscure rule that the majority has relied upon contemplates a responsible president who will consult with the agencies affected and reject a misleading and partisan declassification effort. Sadly, this is not something we can expect from the current occupant of the Oval Office. He will have to answer for his actions. But there will be no avoiding congressional complicity in the shattering of yet another norm of office, check and balance." You know, that's the other thing about Trump, is he doesn't understand that government is a system of checks and balances. That's the premise on which this government was formed. We have three co-equal branches of government, right? There's the executive, there's the legislative, which is Congress, and there's the judicial, which is the Supreme Court. Trump seems to think that all those branches work for him, under him. He needs to go back and take a seventh grade civics class. Oh, wait, we don't teach civics in school anymore. Yeah, I think I had civics in eighth grade, actually, where and a class I found fascinating even back then. But Trump doesn't seem to get the basic premise of it. And the really sad thing is that no one will teach him it. They're just going along with his misconstrued beliefs that he's some kind of a king, an emperor who has, dear leader, who has the right to rule with an iron fist. Well, the good news, I guess, is that they haven't released this memo yet. But today, Trump went up to down to West Virginia, to where this Republican retreat is happening, and delivered a speech. I listened to about 30 seconds of it before I could take it no longer, because he was going on and on, bitching, complaining how the Democrats sat on their hands during the State of the Union address when he was talking about, that African-American unemployment is at an all-time low, something that Trump took credit for, which is not his credit to take. So meanwhile, there's other stuff going on. I'm expecting a phone call, and I bet that's it. I'm going to change topics here. We have Howie Klein coming up in a few minutes. It's Thursday, after all, so we will talk politics with Howie Klein. And I'll keep an eye on the chat room, and you guys can let me know if they release this memo. I think it's going to happen tomorrow, actually. But again, it's just one more nail in the coffin of our democracy. Sorry to put it so bluntly, but it's all I can think about. I do spend a lot of time thinking about healthcare, though, and here's my segue. I want to bring on the line Mitchell Stolberg. Mitch is a an old time listener of the show, old friend of the program, who was a Bernie delegate to the convention. He went on to get more involved in politics. He's now chair of the Broward County chapter of Progressive Democrats of America, which is one of the groups that's putting together the Florida Healthcare Summit. Mitch, is that you?
That's me, Nicole. Good hearing from you.
Well, good hearing from you, and thank you for calling in. And thank you for the invitation, by the way. I was contacted by somebody who's involved in this group, inviting me to participate in the Florida Healthcare Summit, which is happening 2 weeks from tomorrow and Saturday. It's February 16th and 17th. Why don't you tell us a little bit, what is the Florida Healthcare Summit?
Well, it's a group of people that were concerned about healthcare as a right. Coming together, we have a huge coalition of Our Revolution, Healthcare Now, PDA, Progressive Democrats of America, a whole host of other people who decided that, just like California bringing healthcare as a right to California and other states, that we decided that it's time that we do something here in Florida. Fortunately, we have people like David Richardson and Senator Victor Torres, who just put in a bill on the Florida Senate in the House for single payer.
Oh, really?
So we need to help them get that going.
Cool. So the Florida legislative session that happens in March, doesn't it?
It's going on right now.
Oh, it's going on now.
Yeah.
Wow. Shows what I know.
Yeah. There's some crazy stuff going on there.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
There always is in Florida, and I've been remiss. Maybe I should pay more attention to what's going on in Florida rather than trying to figure out what's going on nationally because I can't.
I kind of do both. I'm also the legislative chair for the Florida Progressive Caucus.
Oh, good for you! The Florida Progressive Caucus.
Yeah.
Our pal Susan Smith is the president of that group, and you guys do some great work. Florida is a tough state. We'll talk about that in a moment. But let's talk about the healthcare summit. So it's a 2-day event happening in West Palm Beach. What's gonna go on there?
We have panels anywhere from women's issues with Lois Frankel and Netzadeo. Tony Van Pelt from the president of NOW are going to be talking about some health issues, along with Nina Turner from Our Revolution.
Uh-huh.
We also have, hosting a panel for elected officials or candidates who are running for office. Tim Canova,
uh-huh.
who's running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I have Tamika Lyles, who's running against Bill Nelson. We have Charla Richardson, who's running against Stephanie Murphy up in Florida. There's a whole host of people. We have local people in city government, in county government, are going to talk about how they plan on bringing health care as a right to their local governments, helping to save money in city costs and county costs and insurance. Michael Lightly with the National Nurses is going to be coming in and speaking. He's very instrumental in bringing the healthcare bill to California, along with Bill Honigan. There's tons of people. And I'm really happy that you're going to be part of the show. And good news today was that we now have Michael Papantonio from Ring of Fire.
Oh, Mike Papantonio.
He's going to be hosting a seminar or a panel on the opioid crisis.
Oh, great. Oh, that should be really good. Yeah, Mike is great. Well, so it's going to happen February 16th and 17th. It's a Friday and a Saturday. It's
right.
at the PBI Airport Embassy Suites Ballrooms and Conference Center. So it's right by the Palm Beach Airport. So I guess you can go one day or both days. The website is floridahealthcaresummit.org. I'll have a link up on the blog where I post today's podcast if you're interested in buying a ticket to it. So you can go one day or both days?
It's a 2-day event. The dinners are separate if you wanted to go to the dinners. The keynote speakers is going to be Nina on Friday. Michael Lightly is going to be a lunch keynote. And Alan Grayson is going to be a keynote on Saturday evening. So those are like anywhere from like $40 just for the dinner.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if Alan, if they've made it official yet, but you know, Howie Klein is on the show every Thursday. And it was 2 weeks mm-hmm. ago, Howie Klein let it slip that Alan Grayson is running for Congress again. He hasn't said
he's been sending emails out.
Oh, has he? I'm not on his email list anymore. Alan and I had a little bit of a falling out a couple of years ago, and so we haven't really spoken. So good. Did he say what district he's running in?
Off the top of my head, no, I don't know.
All right,
that.
I'll find out. It's all right.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. We had a personal falling out, but he's still, he's great to have in Congress. I love the fact that Nina Turner is coming in. She's now president of Our Revolution, which of course is Bernie Sanders' organization that sprouted out of his campaign. And, you know, one of their biggest issues is Medicare for all. The situation in Florida with health care is, well, it's like it is around the rest of the country. It's pretty anemic right now. So you mentioned in the Florida legislature, a couple of the state senators introduced a single payer plan. Realistically, right. That's not going to go anywhere. We need to flip the Florida legislature is what we need to do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the plan that we're this whole process is just to get people excited, to people to do something, to get some action. What we're going to be doing, all the candidates or all the people that are going to be speaking are basically going to be trying to be speaking about how we're going to do this in Florida. We know it's not going to be overnight. It's going to take some time. Annette Tadeo's pushed a bill for expanding Medicaid. So there's different ways of doing it. We figured the only way we might be able to get it nationally is if every state starts doing something on the grassroots level, even the city commissioners or your city officials or your county officials can do a think plan for Medicare for all. Because it will save them money. And there's also, there's a business luncheon that they're doing. They're going to be showing the movie Fix It with, I forgot his name. The guy, the producer, the guy who produced the movie is going to be on also. So if you just wanted to go to that movie, that's a separate entity other than being part of the summit.
Uh-huh.
And the national nurses are playing a huge role in this. So this is something that's, you know, we're not playing games. We're serious about, you know, Medicare for all and healthcare as a human right.
Well, this is great. Florida tends to, you know, often be sort of left in the dust. We're not a very active state. And so it's nice to see something like this popping up. Now, who put this all together? I know you're with Progressive Democrats of America, who's involved. Who else is behind this Florida Healthcare Summit?
Media Lab, Rob Lawson, is one of the is the organizers, and Stephen, who used to be a record producer or concert producer, who every one of us have healthcare issues. Which makes it a little bit more personal as to why we're doing it. I know you're going to be speaking on some of your issues that you've gone through in the past few years. So this is why we're all doing it and coming together and making sure that something is being done, because you know the Republicans will just keep taking away everything. You know, it's like Alan Grayson said, your healthcare plan is you die. You know. Stay healthy or you die. That's your choices.
Right.
And that's not an option. That's not an option.
Great. Well, the website is floridahealthcaresummit.org. I'll put up a link. I'll put up the information should you care to buy a ticket. Come again. It's Friday and Saturday. I don't know which day I'm speaking. I don't know. I guess we'll find out as we get closer. But it's only 2 weeks away. So,
Right, and tickets are starting to go real quickly. So, you know, click on Nicole's link and purchase your tickets. Come to the dinners. It's going to be some amazing speakers. If you've never heard Michael Lightly speak or Nina Turner speak or some of the others, they're phenomenal people.
And what I'm going to do while I'm there is, I don't know how much I can add to it. Again, I'll tell my story of dealing with lung cancer. And the thing about mm-hmm. cancer is it hits you out of the blue. You know, I had no
right.
clue that I was sick. I had no symptoms, no nothing. When it gets you, it just gets you. It knows no barriers. If it's going to hit you, it's going to hit you, and you're stuck with the consequences. But there's so many great people who are going to be there. So I'm going to bring along my tape recorder. 2 weeks
right.
from tomorrow, I won't be doing a show because I'll be up there. But I'll talk to a lot of the speakers that you'll have and you know have content for the show going forward. So I'll talk to a lot of the guests. But
right.
come out.
I know
you
talked. I know you talked about on your show about medical marijuana. there is going to be a panel on that as well. So that's something also that I've been pushing for through the Florida legislature, make sure that we get dispensaries in the city, since 80% of the people actually voted for it.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that we did. It's been over a year since we voted for it, and so it is the law of the land. Medical marijuana is legal in Florida, but I'll be damned if I know how you go about getting a card or finding a dispensary, because they just don't exist.
Right. Exactly.
So I see you have Eric Stevens, Deputy Executive Director of Florida for Care, and that's the group that one of the groups that was responsible for pushing that through. All right, Mitchell Stolberg, again, chair of the Broward County chapter of Progressive Democrats of America. If people want to join the Broward chapter of PDA, how do they get a hold of you?
We have a website or a Facebook page. It's PDA Broward. Or they could just, my name is Mitchell, M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L, P-D-A, Broward, @gmail.com.
All right. Mitchell, I'll see you in a couple of weeks, and it'll be good to
look forward to it.
See you out there. Thanks so much. Thanks for checking in with us. All right.
No problem. Thank
you. Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, we hopefully we'll have some other speakers. I've asked for Nina Turner to come on the show and some of the other people who will be there to join us. So we'll get there. We'll get there. All right. It is Thursday. You know what Thursday means, don't you?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're going to love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Yes, it is Thursday. Every Thursday we get together with Howie Klein of Down With Tyranny and the Blue America PAC to talk about politics and things going on. Hello, Howie Klein.
Hi, except we're not going to talk about politics for the first minute anyway.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said for the first minute we're not going to talk about politics.
No? What are we talking about?
I was just writing about you. Now, tell me if I'm correct or not.
Okay.
Was the radio station, the AAA station that you worked at, KSCA?
Yes, KSCA. It stood for, it was the worst radio slogan ever, Southern California's Album Alternative. So it was KSCA, yeah.
Well, I just wasn't positive of the call letters because I was just writing about it. And the reason I was writing about it is because there are 41 Republicans that are, for one reason or another, leaving Congress, leaving the House. That's a number that's
41.
So huge. I don't remember that ever happening before.
Wow.
So they're just retiring. So I was writing about it, and at the end of the story, I decided to put in Andrea Bocelli, Sarah Brightman song, Time to Say Goodbye. So
uh-huh.
It was just, you know, just a flip thing. And then I decided, you know, sometimes people like hearing my stories, and that I would put on the, I would tell the story of what happened, why I had that song and why I played it on KSCA.
Uh-huh.
And as it turned out, I went to Germany, and there was a fight, a boxing match in Germany. And it was their big boxing champion. And he had, he was retiring, so this was his last fight, and Andrea Bocelli and Sarah Brightman sang the song for the first time at that boxing match, and it was historical. It became immediately the biggest selling song in the history of Germany, the biggest selling song in the history of Belgium.
Wow.
It went to number one everywhere in Europe. It went 11 times platinum in Germany alone. It was so gigantic, and they offered it to me for free. I was the president of Reprise Records. I was there visiting them, and they said, why don't you put it out in America? They didn't know at that time how big it would be. It was just coming out. So I loved it. And I thought, yes, I'll do that. So I go back to Warner Brothers and I offer it to, you know, my company. I ask them what they think. And yes, I was the president. I could have done whatever I wanted to do. But I went to my A&R department and my promotion department, and they universally said, this thing is not going to sell in the United States. It will not sell. And they said, don't get it. Don't do it. Even though we were getting it for free, they said no. So the next stop was KSCA, and I did a guest slot there for 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
And the first song I played was this song. And for the next 2 hours, every phone call was people coming on and crying and asking me to please play it again.
Wow.
And what is that? And that's the most beautiful thing I ever heard. I mean, there were literally women crying on the phones because they loved it so much. So I, you know what happened? I gave it to another friend at another company. He put it out on his label, and it was not a big hit. My guys were right.
Wow.
It was a moderate hit, but It was not the kind of hit in America that it was all over Europe. Anyway, that's what I was writing on my blog just now when you called.
I see. Okay. Well, good to know. I will look out for that that post. Howie Klein,
right.
You know, it's
funny.
Well,
what the piece is really about, of course, is all these Republicans retiring and why that's happening. It literally has never happened before. I mean, we have a long way to go before the elections in November, and 41 retirements, including nine from Ryan's inner circle, the committee chairman. So, you know, nine in leadership positions that set policy for the GOP leaving. I mean, powerful, powerful guys.
Trey Gowdy, we learned yesterday, is not running for re-election.
That's right. Trey Gowdy is one of them. And I mean, Trey Gowdy is in a completely safe seat. It's a R+15. I mean, there's no way a Democrat is going to win that seat. It's just no matter what happens, even if the Republicans lose 100 seats, one of them will not be Trey Gowdy's seat. But he just cannot stand it anymore. He said he just hates it and just wants out, and he's leaving.
I don't blame him. You know,
some of them are leaving because they will be defeated and they don't want to be defeated. Paul Ryan is probably one of those. He hasn't made an announcement yet. But it's likely that he's going to leave. And it's just the whole thing is just completely like unprecedented. And it's all Trump. I mean, it's just, you know, people are shocked that he is he's there and he's just changing all of the norms. And they're just getting the idea. They don't want to be there anymore. They don't want to have to like answer for him. And that's why 41 Republicans leaving.
That's
amazing. I mean, you always get some leaving, but it's more like 10.
Right.
Not 41.
Right. Earlier today when I was, you know, writing up notes of things to talk about, I saw it was 34. And then you said it's 41. So I guess they're dropping like flies.
Yes, they are dropping like flies, which is good.
Yeah, it is good. You know, I think part of it is they don't want to carry water for him. But the sad thing is that this Republican Party is, you know, I was talking in the first segment of the show about this whole memo thing and how they're going up against the FBI and the Justice Department, you know, saying that, thumbing their nose at the fact that there's classified information in this memo that the White House is dead set on releasing because it helps provide shade for the president. And you got Paul Ryan backing him up. And I guess there are some Republicans, even though I might be diametrically opposed to everything they stand for politically, that and they won't go against their party, but it probably leaves them with a really bad taste in their mouths.
Yes, several of them are grumbling about it, and you know they don't like the idea. But when it comes to a vote, they'll all, you know, fall in line. They always do.
It's amazing. Did you watch the State of the Union address the other night?
What do you think?
I think you didn't.
You're right.
Yeah, I don't blame you. But did Randy Brice go? He was supposed to go as Mark Pocan's guest.
He was Mark's guest. He was there wearing black. And it was funny because Jim Sensenbrenner, who's another congressman from, in fact, he's a senior congressman from the state of Wisconsin. He's a Republican, happens to weigh about 450 pounds, But and he, remember, he was the one. He's a mammoth guy. He's just humongous, and he eats enough food for like a herd of elephants. And he got famous because he was angry that Michelle Obama started like an organic garden
right.
at the White House,
right.
and that pissed him off. And he made a remark about her fat ass. Yeah, this guy that literally weighs 450 pounds was talking about her fat ass because he was angry that she was, you know, trying to offer people organic food and healthy food, and that just pissed him off no end. In any case, he was also angry that Randy Bryce was going to this thing that Mark had invited him, and he made some insane remarks about it. And I should get them and read them to you because they were like really crazy. And let's see, what day was that? Was that this month?
Tuesday was the State of the Union.
Tuesday, and today is what?
Thursday.
Gee, time does go by, and I don't even know how to find it. Okay, I think I'll just look up Sensenbrenner.
Now he's not one of the ones who says he's not running for re-election, is he?
Not yet. But you know, he could have.
There's still time. On the...
Oh, I know where it is. I know exactly how to find it. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, this is what he said. This is the exact quote. "It is not a venue to score cheap political points." That's what he said about Randy going to this thing. And what was it except an opportunity for Trump to try to score cheap political points? That's what he turned the State of the Union into.
Entirely.
That and some commercial. I don't know. Did it actually happen where he scrolled people's names across the screen who contributed $35 or more
to
his campaign?
Yes. He streamed it on his campaign website. So on that stream, they scrolled the names of people who contributed $35 or more. But who's watching the State of the Union address on his Donald Trump for President website? That's who saw it. But the fact that he did it is, how sleazy is that? It's just what you'd expect from someone like Trump.
Yes. But, you know, I mean, I just thought that, you know, why would Jim Sensenbrenner say that about Randy Bryce? That made no sense to me, especially in the I mean, was Randy Bryce just by being there? I mean, it's not like he unfurled a flag. He was a guest.
Right. Well, what was it when, I don't know, one of them, I don't remember which one of those miscreants, but one of them brought Ted Nugent to an Obama State of the Union address. Ted Nugent, who said something along the lines of, you know, wanting to shove a gun up his something,
yes,
or other, right?
I mean, and another Republican, let's see, oh, that right-wing lunatic from the panhandle of Florida.
Oh, Getz.
Yeah, he brought an anti-Semitic neo-Nazi with him.
Yeah.
This guy named Johnson. I can't remember his first name. But he actually brought a real Nazi.
Yes. Right. And
no one complained about that.
Well, some people did, but apparently not Sensenbrenner. He had no problem with that.
No.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's right. His name is Gates. G-A-E-Z.
E-T-Z.
I mean, he's one of the most shameless members of Congress now.
Yeah, and he pops up on TV all the time. I guess they like people who are going to say outlandish things because, you know, it's one of the things that gets me to turn the television off. So I guess, you know, thank goodness for small favors.
And it's also one of the things that that they like about Trump is that he says outlandish things. So for some number of people in the country who have no lives, this is the entertainment. You know, Trump making, you know, it's the Trump show. And they love it.
Yeah.
And Gates wants to be part of it.
It's really scary. Did you see that the House could vote as early as Tuesday on another stopgap bill to fund the government, this time through March 22nd? Is this what they're going to do, is just keep going along with these short continuing resolutions and never have an actual budget?
Well, I don't think it's never, but I think it will be another reason for people to vote these Republicans out in November. And yes, they can't get their own caucus together. If they don't need one Democratic vote, they could pass this without a single Democratic vote in the House anyway. Mm. But they are fighting amongst themselves.
Right. There's only 3 days left, 3 more days in session. Right now, the Republicans are on their retreat. And then on the 7th, the Democrats go on their retreat. And the 8th is the day that this continuing resolution runs out. So they're going to have to do it again. This is the most inane operating of a government that I can remember, although I'm sure there have been bad ones before. I just don't recall them.
Never this bad.
Howie Klein, I'm looking at the list of the Blue America 18 candidates, and it's growing. You've got quite a number that you've endorsed. What I wanted to do, if we can, because it's been a while, and we get new people tuning into the show all the time, to talk about Blue America and how it came about and how you choose candidates, because we are in primary season. It's in full swing, and this is when this is the important time when we can actually make some impact and get some real progressives on the ballot in November in the primary season. That's why I'm always reminding people to not only register to vote, but make sure your registration is valid, especially now. How did Blue America come together? How did you start this?
I wanted to help progressives who are not connected to sources of big money. And at that time, this was in 2005, the DCCC held all the cards. They were the only source of money for candidates who wanted to run. And if you didn't have their blessing, you couldn't run. And I wanted to change that. And it wasn't just me. I mean, in terms of Blue America, there was also John Amato at that time. Later, Digby, she's known as Digby, but her name is Heather Parton. She mm-hmm. joined us. And there were some other people as well. And then there were other groups that were just getting started with this, primarily Daily Kos, where they were doing it as well. So the idea was to use the internet to aggregate small donations for progressive candidates, although Daily Kos was more into just Democratic candidates. Blue America tended to try to steer not towards just generic Democrats, but towards progressives. It didn't always work out because people would lie to us. They would claim to be progressives, and either they were full of it, or they didn't understand the word progressive in the same way that we did. But over that time, we learned how to get the truth out of people. People might not want to tell you where they really stand. And, very often, if you go to a website of a conservative Democrat, there's no issues page. Or if there is an issues page, it'll be, barely more than, we love America and apple pie and mama. So you want to, look for cues that tell you where they really stand. Are they, for example, if right now most of the Democrats who use the word Obamacare are trying to avoid talking about single payer, trying to avoid talking about Medicare for all, and mm-hmm. so the cue is to see which candidates are happy to talk about Medicare for all or single payer, and as opposed to the ones who are just saying we got to fix Obamacare. Fixing Obamacare, very nice, but is that answering the question about the future of healthcare in this country? I don't think so.
No.
So we've learned over time, and there have been several instances of vetting where we got taken. I don't think we get taken anymore, but we'll see. I remember with a guy named, his name was Chris Carney in Pennsylvania. We were interviewing him, and he sat there and through the phone. And I found out later from his campaign manager, many years later, his campaign manager was no longer with him. And he told me that the whole time he was on the phone with me, he was giving me the finger through the phone and laughing at me and, you know, making really obscene gestures. And yet saying the stuff that he knew I wanted to hear, but he was lying.
Oh, my God.
He was lying. And when as soon as he got into Congress, he joined the Blue Dogs. And you know, we had asked him a very specific question, among others. We asked him a lot of questions that he disappointed us on. And one of the questions was, would you vote, will you vote, since it was going to come up if he got elected, will you vote for the bill that the violence against women bill? And he said yes, of course he would vote for it. So that was it. He didn't go into any ifs, ands, or buts. He just said yes, he will vote for it. And then after he was elected, there were only I'm not going to remember this number right, but it was something like 8 Democrats. In fact, that was the number. It was 8 Democrats who voted no. There were plenty of Republicans who voted yes. I mean, most Republicans voted no, but there were more than 8 Republicans that voted yes, and it did pass. But he was one of the 8 Democrats who voted no after promising us that he would vote for it.
Wow.
So, you know, that taught us a very big lesson. Of course, we taught him a lesson as well, because I told him if he didn't pay back the money from all of the Blue America donors, which was about $70,000, that if he didn't pay the money back, we would spend money to defeat him in the next election. And he, you know, just emptied a barrage of curses at me. And I said, you know, no need to curse, but, you know, here's your chance and more curses. And then we did spend $200,000 defeating him.
Wow.
And we did defeat him.
Good. Good.
Yep. So we don't want to do that again. That was very traumatic for us. And we're, you know, now, you know, being much more careful in getting to know people. So it's not just a questionnaire or a question, but we try to get to know candidates and figure out how are they going to really vote when they're in Congress. And I think I was telling you a week or two ago that I was, you know, doing one of my vetting conversations with a new candidate from Philadelphia named Nina Ahmad. Now, Nina is so amazing that halfway through the conversation, I said to myself, why am I vetting her? She should be vetting me. I mean, this woman is just absolutely amazing. And then we had some good news. She was running just yesterday. She's running. The guy who she was running against is Bob Brady, who's the machine boss of Philadelphia. So
right.
This guy is a real corrupt guy. And yesterday he retired. He's announced he's retiring and spending his time. He wants to spend the rest of his time with his grandchildren. And that's going to make it a lot easier for Nina to win. And of course, he's not retiring to spend time with his grandchildren. He's retiring because he doesn't want to be beaten by Nina Ahmad.
Good. Well, I see her, Nina Ahmad, on your list.
Yes.
Every week when you're on, I put up a link to the Blue America page. And there's a way, when you go to Blue America, what it brings you to an Act Blue page, because it's all about raising money for these candidates to get around the DCCC's horrific fundraising tactics because they don't help progressives. So there's a way when you go to the Blue America page, it says right on top, your contribution will be divided evenly between all these recipients, unless you can click here to allocate amounts differently or view all recipients. And that brings up the list of all of the candidates that Blue America has endorsed so far. So I thought we'd take a couple of minutes. You mentioned Nina Ahmad. Who are some others that people should know about that you're really excited about that maybe we haven't heard of?
Well, I'm excited about all of them, but that's a good metric to use by saying people who they haven't heard of. So one of the other new candidates who we just endorsed is another woman whose name is Lisa Brown. So Lisa will be known by people in Washington State because for two reasons. One is that she was the president of the state Senate. Oh, no, not the president of the state Senate. She was the majority leader of the state Senate. And she got a lot done while she was majority leader. And she was in the news a lot because she was majority leader. But she retired from the state Senate in Washington because she got a more challenging job that she was excited about as chancellor of Washington State University. And while she did a lot of things while she was in Congress, and while she was in the state legislature, and she did a lot of things while she was chancellor, one of which was to start a medical school that was specifically meant, now it doesn't mean only this, but it was specifically meant to train rural doctors. Now, she's out in, her district is the eastern part of Washington State, which is very, very rural. There are a couple of cities, one of them being Spokane. Now, it's not exactly a metropolis like New York or Boston or Miami, but it's, you know, it's a fairly it's a rural area with a couple. You know, Walla Walla is another city, a small city in that district. But it's basically it's a gigantic district because it's rural, and they need doctors, and they were not being served well. So she started a medical school that is specifically training doctors who want to be in rural areas, and they have, you know, different things that they have to do in rural areas. And you know, that was a really nice thing. So the thing that's interesting about this district is there's only been in contemporary history one sitting Speaker of the House who's been defeated while he was Speaker of the House. And that was in that district. And wow. It was Tom Foley, who was a Democrat. And Foley was defeated, and it was actually, it was kind of funny. Now, when you hear the word Foley, you think of Mark Foley.
Sure.
Right. So the same year that Tom Foley, the Speaker of the House, was defeated, that was the same year that Mark Foley got into Congress. So he had been a legislator in Florida, and he got into Congress. And some people came to Newt Gingrich, who was the head of the Republicans in the House at the time, and they said, we've got to be careful of this guy Foley because he's gay and he has an eye out for young guys, underage guys. So I don't know if Newt Gingrich just mixed it up or he thought it would be funny, but he started a rumor that Tom Foley was gay. And that had a lot to do with Tom Foley losing. It wasn't the only thing, but that was a big part of it. And the funny thing is that Mark Foley, years later, was the one who was involved with a scandal where he was actually having relations with the pages, underage pages in Washington.
Wow.
But you know, it was just a mistake or you know, a dark. I always thought it was dark humor. From Gingrich that caused that thing. I think he knew that it wasn't Mark Foley, but he just got this like sick idea to, you know, switch the names of these two. I mean, Mark Foley, who no one knew, and then Tom Foley, who's you know, a very big deal.
Wow.
In any case, the reason I just told you that story is because that's in the district that Lisa is running in, and although there is no Speaker of the House there, the most high-ranking Republican woman in Congress is her opponent, and that is Kathy McMorris Rogers.
Oh, okay.
And so here we have a situation where Randy Bryce is likely to defeat if he even runs, or let's say is kicking the Republican Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, out of Congress. So that's happening, and at the same time, in the district where they got Foley, there's a chance that Lisa Brown is going to defeat one of Ryan's top lieutenants, this Kathy McMorris Rogers.
That would be amazing. What talk about sweet revenge.
Well, it is, and what's even more amazing about it is that Lisa Brown is an absolutely incredible candidate. I mean, I didn't know her at all. I had never heard of her. And Chris Novoselic. Now, you probably remember who he is, right?
Yes, from Nirvana.
Exactly. He's the one that turned me on to her. He said he met this amazing candidate, and I've got to get to know her.
Wow.
And I was thinking, well, she was the leader of the Democrats in the state legislature of Washington. She's probably very establishment, probably not my kind of candidate. And he said, no, you're wrong. She is your kind of candidate. You've got to give it a shot. And I did. And he was right. I was wrong. She was incredible. I mean, this is a woman. We need people like her. We need women like her in Congress. It's going to make a very, very, very big difference to have people like this who knows what she's doing, knows how to work across the aisle in a way that doesn't mean that she's giving in to the Republicans, but instead is working to get them to do the right thing. So that's something that doesn't happen that frequently.
Right.
And it takes a really, really good legislator to know how to do that. And that's what Lisa Brown can bring to Congress. And I'm very, very, very excited about the idea of her being there and working there. It's really.
But this is one more.
I'm getting the feeling that she's going to win.
Really? Okay, good. This is one more reason, though. People need to make sure that they are registered to vote, because you got to go out and vote for Lisa Brown in Washington State in the primary so she can be the candidate to defeat Kathy McMorris Rodgers. Howie Klein, we're out of time. This half hour is done.
It was good to talk to you this week.
You too, and we'll do it again next week. Thank you so much.